This webcast is made possible in part by support from the listener members of the Classical Network, WWFM and WWFM.org. Thank you for your support.
Cadenza, winner of the Deems Taylor Virgil Thompson Award for Broadcasting, is a production of the Classical Network. Funding for this program is made possible by the listener members of the Classical Network. I'm David Ozenberg, your host, and this week we'll continue our keyboard series and chat with a pianist who is so much more, Shahan Arzrouni. In addition to being a world-class pianist, he is an ethnomusicologist, lecturer, composer, writer, producer, and even radio host. And so much more, as you'll hear. Born in Turkey, but of Armenian heritage, in fact royal heritage, he was a true child prodigy, studying first in Istanbul, and then came to the U.S. to study at Juilliard in 1964. Many of you may have seen him on various TV performances on such high-exposure programs as The Tonight Show, Merv Griffin, and PBS, as he was the great comic Victor Borg, quote-unquote straight pianist sidekick for 18 years, but he discovered his Armenian roots after many years in the dark about music from that country and has been promoting and championing the music of Armenia for many years, devoting much time to recording composers from that country in an ongoing series which to date has a recording of early Armenian composers, one devoted to the 20th century Doyan Komitas, and his latest CD release featuring early piano music of the American but of Armenian roots composer Alan Hovan. From that composer's so-called Armenian period, in fact, you're listening to the final movement, Kala, which actually has Indian roots, from his suite Hakpat, which is scored, as you hear, for piano and percussion. My guest today is joined by percussionist Adam Rosenblatt. I spoke with Shahan Arzrouni via Zoom a couple weeks ago. Happy today to be talking with Shahan Arzrouni. Pleasure to speak with you. And I didn't identify you as pianist because you have done and accomplished so much in your career. Pianist, composer, ethnomusicologist, teacher, lecturer, writer, recording artist. You've been done broadcasting on the radio, producer, impresario. So no part of the music business industry you haven't really tried or touched. What's the driving force for you to do all these things rather than just have been a pianist, period? What's your driving force behind that?
I was initially interested in piano because my aunt was a pianist and a composer, and she noticed that I had facility at the piano at the age of 3.5.
Right.
So she started me, and then quickly she found out that it was much better if a professional worked with me. And I played my first recital when I was 4.5 years old. I was just a straight pianist until I came to this country in 1964. Then I entered Juilliard, and there were all kinds of interesting things going on. You know, I also lived at the International House, where 60% of the people were non-Americans, 40 were Americans. So that, you know, there was this fusion between the world countries. I guess from that, my interest grew, and I became aware of my ethnic music. I didn't know much about it. I was born in Istanbul, Turkey, so there is very limited information there about Armenian music. So Juilliard and the International House gave me the opportunity to kind of find out about Armenian music. At that time, Victor Borga was looking for a sidekick.
We'll talk about that. We'll talk about that. I'm just curious with that first question. You've done so many things.
Yeah.
Did they just come like organically, like this opportunity arose, so you did it? Or did you have a clear picture? I want to write, I want to produce, that's what I'm curious about.
No, the opportunity arose and I just did it and I could do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
There was planning.
And you've done it successfully in all those areas too, which is amazing. It's a really accomplished career. So we're talking today because of the release of this recording of music by the American composer, Alan Hovhaness, who was of Armenian heritage and really mined
that field of the Armenian music and culture throughout his career, but specific periods. So we'll get to the CD, but you just mentioned how you were born in Istanbul, but you're of Armenian descent. You actually have nobility in Armenian descent.
Right.
I'm just wondering, as you grew up there, because you were a prodigy, you were on the stage by 4 and a half, but how did that talent, how did your ingrown talent, how was it handled in the education system in which you grew up?
We all had to go to regular school, the elementary and the middle and the high school. But in addition to that, after school, we went to the municipal conservatory. That's where my aunt's teacher taught.
Okay.
And he was interested in what I was doing. From the age of 7, he really worked with me. One thing, he was Austrian originally, and had come to Turkey after World War II and kind of established the European Western musical system in Istanbul. This was an extraordinary situation. One thing that was revolutionary for me was he would tape record at the time in the 50s lessons, and then he would play back our lesson, whatever I had done, and show me what was right and what was wrong. It wasn't just, oh, well, you did it wrong. No, I actually heard what I had done wrong.
Yeah.
That had been an extraordinarily educational process, which I still do until today. Oh. I have to satisfy myself on my own tape recorder before I get up and play in public. So when I came here in 64, to do my graduate work. No, actually, I did the college work. At Juilliard, I was very well prepared. For example, to graduate from the Istanbul Municipal Conservatory, we had to be able to play all 24 Chopin etudes. There was no getting away from it. There was one graduate every 5 years because nobody could do it.
You had to do it from memory?
Yeah, that wasn't a problem at that time. My memory was good. Now I have to use the music to play anything.
That's interesting. That he would tape record it because that was reel to reel. So that was a lot of labor and effort on his part.
Yes. But it's an incredible educational process. And I think in music making, the most important thing is to hear yourself. What happens when we play? We get so preoccupied with the technical issues while we are playing, we forget to hear what is going on.
Right.
After all, what we hear, what we project orally is the most important thing, right? When you tape record yourself, that is permanently kept. So you can hear it even today. I record it, I listen to it, and I immediately erase it. I don't want a trace of it.
Right.
Because there are just so many problems in my playing.
When you were growing up and going to the academy in Istanbul, you were surrounded by other students who were advanced on their instrument or were excellent musicians, right? That was the group you were among in other students.
Yes. It was a very demanding program. I mean, to graduate from theory class, at the end, they would lock us. I mean, there were a couple of people, that's it, for 8 hours in a room, and they will give you a theme. And you were supposed to write a four-voice fugue in 8 hours without the aid of a piano. There was no piano in it. So when you can do that, then, you know, you are kind of prepared. So it was very easy for me to enter Juilliard.
From a number of years ago, a recording my guest Shahan Arzrouni made on New World Records called Childhood Memories, Music for Younger Pianists, we'll hear a smattering of movements, beginning with Amy Beach's Child Carnival, we'll hear the Promenade movement, then to Robert Starrer's Sketches in Colors, the movement Purple, followed by the Duck Duet movement from Luis Talma's Sound Shots, and finishing up with music of the strict serialist Roger Sessions, of all people, the concluding march from his Pieces for Children.
Thank you.
So at 64, you come here, you get into Juilliard.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, while you were at Juilliard, you got this gig to be the straight man or straight pianist, if you were, for the legendary comic Victor Borga, which brought you a lot of high profile gigs where your name was out there. I mean, you were talking about like The Tonight Show and Merv Griffin and all this stuff. Couple things. How did the gig come about? I mean, was it as fun as the sketches that we see reflect? And were you conscious of, by doing this gig for so many years with Victor Borga, your name was really getting out there? I mean, just how did this whole thing happen?
Well, I got my master's in 68 from Juilliard. And the exams for the master's were in April. Lee Hambrough, who used to be the sidekick, had an engagement for a week in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. Okay. And he needed desperately a replacement. So he went to there was a placement bureau at Juilliard. So they would find jobs for you.
Right.
Things changed a great deal since then. So he went there and he said, you know, he was looking for a pianist who could replace him for a week. So they gave him about 30 names who were available. And he actually, this is according to Lee, auditioned 30 people.
Wow.
Because you also, you know, I'm short. Physically, you had to be somewhat funny. That was right. Also part right. of the game. You know, you had to be flexible enough to react to Borga's antics. Right. So out of the 30 people, he chose three people. And we three went to Borga's house and presented themselves to him. And Borga chose me. I actually asked him years later, I said, why did you choose me? He said, because we are short. So anyway, this was just for 1 week in Hamilton.
Right.
Borga was so comfortable with my playing that he wanted to work with me. Also, you know, I was much cheaper than Lee Hambrough.
Right.
So he started giving me other gigs, which I did. And eventually, and it was not perhaps so nice, I replaced Hambrough for about 18 years. I played all over the world with the Borga. And it was a highly educational. I mean, you know, you asked, your first question was, how come you did so many different things? That's because Borga added another dimension I didn't know that I had, you see? Yeah. And this guy, he's truly a genius.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe I have done 3,000 or more performances with him. And out of those 3,000 performances, at least 2,000, every time he would perform, I would go backstage and watch him. His timing was so impeccable that every time, with a different situation, with a different reaction from the audience, he would time himself differently. And it would be very funny. If he did it exactly the way he had done it before, it wouldn't be funny.
Right.
Yeah.
It actually was fun for you doing these thousands of performances of the same Liszt Hungarian Rhapsody or the two piano things. I mean, but it was fun for you because he would change it up, right? He would react to the audience.
It's the same piece. It's the same piece.
Yeah.
The same damn
thing.
But it was different each time. Something would happen and he would react in a certain way. And if he reacted in a certain way, I had the ability to counter react to his reaction, you know.
And he trusted you to do that, didn't it?
Yes, that's why it worked and we were able to.
Right.
You know, he was an extraordinary pianist.
Yes.
Yeah. He was an extraordinary pianist, but he had the stage fright, terrible stage fright. And he had done the premiere of the Rachmaninoff Second in Europe. He was 14 years old and he was playing with the orchestra in Copenhagen. And in the third movement, you know, there's a fugato kind of thing. So the orchestra starts and the piano has to come in. And this being the premiere, the conductor got completely lost. So Borga got up from his chair and to the podium and told the conductor where he's supposed to be. and went back to the piano and turned to the audience and winked. And the audience roared. That's how Borga discovered.
That's how he
Yes. That's laughter and music could go together.
Go to my last question in this. Were you conscious over these years, you were doing these really high profile gigs, were you conscious that your name was getting out there?
Not many people play for kings and queens and princes and princes. I took all of those people in a very natural way. I remember, you know, I was introduced to the Queen of Iceland.
Okay.
I never knew that, you know, you never talk to the queen unless she addresses you. And there I go talking to her, starting the conversation.
Yeah.
So there have been so many instances like that, which has opened my musical as well as social horizons.
But it was only Iceland, so your impropriety wasn't going to start a world war. So it was just
No. But I've done that in the White House also.
So here's one of the classic bits my guest today, Shahan Arzrouni, did with the great late pianist comic Victor Borga. Not the classic Liszt Hungarian Rhapsody, since that's filled with visual stunts that don't translate to radio, but rather one with the music of Tchaikovsky, this from a performance in Denmark, and since my guest did not speak Danish, Mr. Borga peppers him with inane comments in Danish, such as, his mother preferred him being a dwarf, but it did not materialize, and, do you eat boneless birds in Turkey? To the delight of the Danish audience. Enjoy.
We're now going to add another piano. I should like to introduce a young pianist they brought over from America. He is from Armenian and a maniac. an Armenian, and he came to the United States 8 years ago from Turkey with his mother, who also came 8 years ago from Turkey. They came together, but separate, on the same ship. And they arrived. Also together. He has been studying music at the Juilliard School of Music in New York and recently has completed a very successful concert tour of South America where he gave 8 concerts right after each other in Oblivion, Bolivia, which is Sir Lawrence Bolivia is one of those Hamlets over there with these bedazzled mouths. Will you please welcome Mr. Shahan Arzrouni? Unfortunately, Mr. Arzrouni doesn't understand Danish, but it doesn't matter because I speak English to him all the time. Hans Moore vil så gerne have, at han skulle have været tvær, men det blev ikke til noget. What do you suggest we start with tonight, you choose? Since... Let's do the Tchaikovsky thing. Har man benløse fugle i Tyrkiet? Nå, han forstår ikke et dansk. Naja, det var jag skulle tycka. Thank you. Don't you know it? You do know it. Then perhaps we ought to play something you don't know. Which one don't you know the best? I am going to get us out of this mess.
You mentioned how you really didn't, even despite your heritage, you didn't really come to it till you got to New York, but you have, over your career, tirelessly represented, performed, you've written about, promoted the unawareness of Armenian music and culture. You've been awarded by Armenia with the highest honors for doing this. Why? You could have just stuck to standard piano repertoire and you would have had a fine career. But you've done this. Like Borga, you mix in humor at times when you present these concerts, which is important, I think, and it's beneficial. Just talk about why and the scope and range of what you've covered of Armenian music over these years, maybe composers that are still not as well known as they should be. And then the final question is, has this work over all these years promoting Armenian music, has it bore fruit? Have you seen a higher consciousness of this? So this whole Armenian question to you.
My interest in Armenian music started in 1972.
Okay.
That was the year when Nixon went to China, Henry Kissinger and all that. At the International House, I was roommates with a Chinese fellow from mainland China. He was a literature guy, a poet, and also a wonderful painter. So, you know, we exchanged a lot of ideas and things like that. But one day, for some unknown reason, he was kicked out of the United States, had to go back. And he left all his paintings with me. I have 26 of his paintings. When the relationship with China got warmer, I wrote to Alan, the painter. I said, you know, I'm hearing they're composing Western style music in China. You can get hold of some of them and send them to me. At that time, I was doing my doctorate at NYU. And part of the requirement was to do two original recitals and write a thesis to get a PhD. So I thought, if Alan sends me this music, then I can sit down, learn the stuff, and present it for the first time to the American public. That's wonderful. And Alan came through, sent me loads of piano music. Then I thought, this alone is not, you know, I have to put it in context, this music. I have to play also Chinese music that is not influenced by the communist philosophy. And also music that is influenced by Chinese philosophy. So I have to put all those things together and present it as one. Then somebody suggested, why don't you have a panel also so you can discuss the whole thing? So I had Zhou Wensun, the composer, and some other people, Ralph Samuelson and all that. We did this concert. It was very, very successful. I said, I have found my niche. I'm going to promote Chinese music. Because, you know, you have to have a gimmick in this world, right? Yeah. I mean, just playing Beethoven. There are too many people who play Beethoven better than I do. So okay. I have to find my own niche. I asked one of the panelists who were involved in China at the time, Ralph Samuelson also. I said, can you recommend someone whom I can go and ask whether they can help me to promote this stuff? Well, he said, yeah, there is Johanna Spector, and she is the head of the Asian music. Go to her, and she will guide you. Anyway, I made an appointment. She was teaching she had actually established the Jewish Theological Seminary's ethnomusicology department. That's where my interest comes in, with ethnomusicology, by knowing her. I went to her, and I told my story to her. And she said, wait a minute. She said, you don't look Chinese. I said, I'm not Chinese, I'm Armenian. She said, what are you doing learning and disseminating Chinese music? I'm not going to help you, she said. I was shocked. She said, what you need to do is promote Armenian music. That was the point when my life turned around.
Right.
And dropped everything. Chinese. And then started working on Armenian music. Because of Borga, who combined the music and also comedy, talking, and all that. And also during that period, I had worked with mezzo-soprano Kathy Berberian.
Yeah.
Also did the same thing. This was a classical artist, was doing Monteverdi and Debussy and Berio and all of that stuff. She would also talk to the audience between numbers. Right. And I said, oh, it's perfectly okay then to play and talk a little bit and then go back to the piano and play again. So I said, I'm going to absorb this thing and let me see how. I didn't know that I could speak to the audience because, you know, there's a way of speaking and there's a way of speaking. Some right. people are not convincing at all. Anyway, I tried it in 1975 for the first time. I put together a whole Armenian program and tried it here in New York at the Diocesan Assembly Hall just to see what is going on, you know, how I'm doing. And it went very successfully because I found out that many Armenians don't know anything about their own music. So I learned and I taught at the same time. I said this would be a terrific opportunity to really disseminate Armenian musical culture. And there's an organization here called Armenian General Benevolent Union, and I approached them. They are a worldwide organization. I said, do you think I can perform this program in various chapters all over the world, wherever you have a chapter or whatever is possible? And they were very enthusiastic. They did organize the whole thing. And at the time, I think I went to 30 different cities all over the world, from Australia to Buenos Aires, and presented this program and made it more and more refined. In 75, after I did all of that thing, at the very end, I decided it's time for me to go to Armenia and really experience what's there. Because before then, going to Armenia, the Soviet Armenia, was not such an easy situation. Anyway, with my American passport, I'd become a citizen. It was easier. I went to Armenia for the first time, and it was revelatory for me, what there was. And there was so much more I had to learn to present this thing a little bit more authoritatively. And I started doing some learning about the sources of Armenian music, the liturgical chants and all of that. As I did that, because there weren't others who were doing any of this stuff, I was alone. Grove's Dictionary got in touch with the Dictionary of the Middle Ages. Would you write about such and such about Armenian music, mm-hmm. the musical notation, let's say. So I started doing a lot of academic stuff also. And then I enlarged my repertoire, got to know a lot of composers. And the rest is who I am. I still continue my interest. I have a secondary interest, which is music written by the great masters for children, like Bartok or Schumann or right. Bach, Magdalena Bach, or even Liszt. He has a Christmas tree suite for his granddaughter. In 5 years, I did broadcast on WNYC on this subject. Right. So I had dual interest, but eventually the Armenian stuff, you know, got me away from all of that. I'm still interested in the children's music. But anyway, so here I am.
So let's dip into my guest's recording on the Turkish Kalan label of piano works by early Armenian composers. We'll hear music by the first Armenian composer to compose music in a Western style, Dikran Chuhajian, his Danse Caractéristique, followed by a composer who knew and worked with Chopin, Karo Mikuli, his Lied. Thank you.
I mean, we're going to talk about Hovhannes and some of the major composers you've recorded that are Armenian. But are there other composers you've come across? I mean, a few of them have a number of recordings now out of various things, chamber music or orchestral pieces. But are there composers we really should know about, especially if they're contemporary living, that are Armenian, that you champion?
Sure. Khachaturian is Khachaturian. Everybody knows Khachaturian. Yeah. Okay. Right below him, there are five Armenian composers who are not that well known. Saryan, Babajanyan, Mirzoyan, Khudoyan, and there's one more I forget right now. Their music is not that well known. Babajanyan is quite well known because he has written a lot of popular songs. So that's known. That's about it, you know. Sometimes I have to give great credit to Joel Sachs. He's very adventuresome, and he would pick somebody from Armenia or a composer from Armenian origin and stick it to the new ensemble programs, which makes me very happy. But outside of that, I mean, people play the Khachaturian staccato. I mean, everybody knows Khachaturian staccato. That's something that I actually worked with Khachaturian himself in this apartment.
Wow, that's
right. You know, in 74, I think it was. This is also a very interesting story. It was the centennial of Komitas. Who is the fountainhead of Armenian music? It was the centennial, and we decided to put together two LPs at the time and get the best of Armenian artists living in the United States. We had Lucina Mara, Lili Chukasian, Kati Beberian, Vahan Khanzadian, Ara Beberian, Michael Kermoyan, Mara Jemian, and I'm going to jump now, and Alan Hovan is conducting the choir. What happened was, I was the young guy, so, you know, if they needed recordings, the Komitas recordings, to be shipped out, you know, I would go to the warehouse and pick it up and all that. An older gentleman I met on the stairs, and he introduced himself and he said he was the head of Musical Heritage Society. I said, what is Musical Heritage Society?
Right. Yeah. At that time, it was a very young label, yeah.
Yeah, sure. And, you know, he told me what they did and all that. And we started talking. He said, would you record for us? I said, what the hell is he talking about? He hasn't heard me play the piano. I mean, you know, what nerve. I mean, you know, it's wonderful that he's asking me to record. But based on what? I mean, it's terrific luck. I said, what do you want me to record? He said, the Cherny Etudes. Oh, God, you know, who wants to record the Cherny Etude? It's a lot of work and, you know, for nothing.
Right.
I said to him, can we start with something simpler? Oh, he said, you can do whatever you want to. Then, because of my interest in children's music, I knew that Aram Khachaturian had written for children two albums. I said, I want to do that. And he said, fine, anything. And I was learning, I learned, and it was 2 weeks to the recording. I heard that Khachaturian was coming to the city. I said, I've got to get hold of him and play these pieces for him. Right. And let's see, you know, what he has to say. So at least, you know, it'll be correct. I went to his hotel. I talked to him, and he was more than happy to do it because nobody else before then had recorded the pieces, and he was anxious. He said, you know, I'll get a studio for you, and we can go to a studio, and you can play one. I said, no, that won't be necessary. You know, I live nearby. You can come to my house, and I can play for you. And, you know, he came here, and the moment he walked in, and there was no grand piano. I had no grand piano. I just graduated from Juilliard at that point. I had an upright. And he said, you know, where is your grand piano? They called it Royal. I said, what is he talking about? He said, you have just that, the upright piano? I said, yes. You know, I was just a student. I can't afford a grand piano. He said, you know, if you were a good pianist, the government would have given you anyway, but that was a very, very useful meeting because I played almost everything that he had written and I got firsthand knowledge of what he wanted. I mean, I won't take your time, but to explain to me the actual mood of one of the pieces, one of the children's pieces, he transformed himself into a girl and started dancing like a girl. I mean, you know, to be able to do that and convey the feeling, I thought it was a boys' dance. I was playing like a boys' dance. It wasn't. I mean, there was nothing. It said Allegretto. Allegretto doesn't tell you what it is, you know. I mean, you know, I can talk about all of those things for hours, but
that's just so cool that he was right there in your apartment playing with
you. That's
what a memory.
Thank you.
here's my guest, Shahan Arzrouni, performing the famous Toccata from 1935 by Aram Khachaturian. And we'll conclude our chat with pianist Shahan Arzrouni on next week's program and dig into his recordings of the Armenian composer Komitas, and also sample heavily from his new recording of early piano works by the American composer of Armenian roots Alan Hovhaness. I'll leave you with two more tracks from his recording on the Turkish Kalan label of piano works by early Armenian composers. You can check it out at Kalan Records' website, Kalan, K-A-L-N, Kalan.com. First, from Genarios Gorganian, his Bayati, named for a music form or scale from that region, and then a nocturne from a composer who worked closely with Franz Liszt, Stefan Elmas. both performed by my guest today, Shahan Arzrouni. And as always, I'm glad you were in the audience today. Remember, the conclusion of my chat with Shahan Arzrouni will be on next week's program. I hope you can join me here each week for a chat with the great classical musicians of our area and the globe. Remember, you can catch any recent past cadenza program by going to wwfm.org and clicking on Classical and then Webcasts. I ask you to please support this and the many specialty programs we offer by making your donation today at our website. Thank you, and thanks for listening. I'm David Ozenberg, and this has been the award-winning Cadenza, an exclusive production of the Classical Network and WWFM.org.